The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hamas have declared that an Israeli strike killed its Lebanese leader in Tyre, while another Palestinian militant group has said that three of its leaders were killed in a strike on Beirut. And this is after the bombing on Friday of buildings in Beirut, which killed the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah and other top Hezbollah officials. Israel has also opened a new front in its military campaign as it bombed Houthi targets in Yemen. Professor David Dunn, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham, joins me now. David, good morning.
Good morning.
It looks like Israel is just operating with complete impunity without fear of reprisal from anywhere.
I think that's an important part of what is going on here. They recognize that they have the capacity to take out leadership across the board, and that includes in Iran. They have the capacity, if it comes to it, to destroy economic and leadership targets and indeed nuclear facilities in Iran. And as a consequence of that, they recognize that they actually are deterring Iran from attacking them directly or through using the long-range missiles in Lebanon. And as a consequence, they have established escalation dominance in various theatres. Interestingly, the Houthi strike, unlike the American and British attacks on the Houthis, which were counter-force, actually attacking the forces that were attacking shipping in the Red Sea, the Israelis escalated by actually attacking economic targets in Yemen as a way of saying, okay, if you want to take this further, we have the capacity, we have the will to actually escalate this conflict across the piece. And what they're doing is hugely popular in Israel, trying to destroy their enemies in what they regard as the ring of fire that Iran has established around about them.
Has Netanyahu then seized upon this strategy of diverting attention from what the world is condemning in Gaza, and it has a huge amount of criticism at home because of the existence of those hostages still alive in Gaza, diverted attention to a popular war against Hezbollah?
Yeah, and what they're doing is saying that Israel has been attacked, Israel has been threatened, its existence has been threatened by Iran's proxies, and after October 7th, what we need to do is establish our security by destroying our enemies. And it's a very linear approach. It's a very one-dimensional approach, but it's a one which they're having some success in. And for those reasons, it is seen as popular. The long term, of course, is another matter. But as far as actually the military successes they are having, that is bolstering Netanyahu's popularity and his party's supporters up in the polls, and that serves him across the piece.
Do they believe that they will degrade Hezbollah for a generation? Because it just may not take that long. You know, there are people we've never heard of who will step into those leadership positions, maybe not in a week or a month because of their communications having been destroyed effectively by Israel, but people will replace those who've died.
Yeah, so it's about leadership, but it's also about capability. You're right, and that's why this thing is seen as short-sighted. But in terms of the capability, what they've done in Gaza is go into Gaza and destroy the underground tunnel network. What they're saying is we want to have a military presence along the Egyptian border so that no more tunnels can be built and therefore no more military material can be smuggled into that area. So in a sense, what they're saying is we're trying to, on the ground, but through capability, actually prevent there being a future threat. Similarly, with regard to the Lebanon, what they're doing is they're using bunker-busting bombs to actually flatten leadership areas, the tunnel network. And if they do go across the border with ground forces, the aim will be to destroy the capability of Hezbollah to be a threat in the long term. Mm-hmm. And of course, part of it is to destroy those missiles that are threatening Israel on a daily basis, and indeed fired at Israel on a daily basis. So it's partly about trying to use the military instrument to actually create security by destroying the capacity of its enemies to threaten it.
Now, we've been talking about Israel and the accusations against it of committing war crimes, and they're always talking about whatever collateral damage might happen And when we saw those blocks in Beirut being bombed on Friday and little babies being carried out of the wreckage, you're thinking, well, could this be a war crime? And they say, well, no, because that's allowed. You're allowed to kill innocent people if you're targeting the leadership of your enemy. I mean, it's hard to swallow.
It is hard to swallow, and that there have been tens of thousands of people killed in Gaza, and we're now seeing that pattern replicated in Lebanon, and the Israelis are using heavy instruments, but they're using heavy instruments, they would argue, because their enemies have buried themselves in deep bunkers under civilian facilities, and they say Hamas and Hezbollah have a policy of human shields. So what do you expect? Now, of course, they're making themselves hugely unpopular internationally, condemned at the United Nations roundly. But of course, when Netanyahu goes to the United Nations, he actually did two things. He said that this is a place of darkness, that's anti-Semitic, and he actually also timed his speech at the UN for the attack that killed Hezbollah leader in Lebanon. So they don't care, actually.
He got out of town very quickly on the basis that bombing had taken place. I've got to rush back.
Even though he had sanctioned it, of course. Yeah. But I mean, it demonstrates their capacity to do this, that their real-time intelligence has proved to be hugely successful. And they're riding the success of that to actually call Iran's bluff. Okay, if you want to come for us, recognize that you will die. Your leadership will die because we have penetrated Iran. We have the capacity to go for counter leadership. We have the capacity to destroy your economy. It only takes a few attacks on major oil installations or exporting oil terminals, and Iran's economy comes to a standstill. And Israel probably would welcome the opportunity to destroy Iran's nascent nuclear capability. So they are demonstrating they are up for a fight. And so far, it has deterred Iran from actually using those long-range missiles and attacking them. So bizarrely, there's a degree to which actually some aspects of their strategy seem to be working for them.
Now, that's so far. What Iran is saying is that what they did on Friday in killing Hassan Nasrallah and other Hezbollah leaders is going to ensure the destruction of Israel. I mean, that's saber-rattling, I know, but it's unlikely that they will do nothing.
It is, but what's interesting is that when they do something, it tends to be not an escalation. It tends to be a symbolic act. So we had, for example, the one long-range missile fired from southern Lebanon by Hezbollah at the headquarters of Mossad in Tel Aviv. Okay, well, and knowing that, firing one missile, they know that one missile is going to be taken down by the Iron Dome air defences, right? So they're saying, okay, look, we have responded, but they're not responding in a way that actually would achieve a military objective or indeed risk escalation to a conflict with Israel, because I think at this point there is an element in which they are deterred.
Now, are they likely, therefore, to change tack? If they can't, in terms of brute military force, have some sort of reprisal, are they likely to maybe embark on some sort of anti-individual personnel activity, you know, taking, just as the Israelis have taken out or murdered Iranians, that they might choose to do the same with the Israelis?
And that's entirely possible. And what's happened is that the leadership in Tehran has called on all Muslims around the world to attack Israel and destroy Israel and to, by implication, to attack Jews. This is a key element of the struggle that people are involved in here, in that Iran, from the get-go, from the revolution in 79, has called for the destruction of Israel as Israel. And that is part of the stakes, and that is maybe a recognition of the need to be asymmetrical in the way in which it approaches this. But so far, that's difficult to achieve.
Now, the Israelis were warning people to get out of the Bekaa Valley, and if they suspected that anyone there was hiding weaponry or rockets on a premises or a farm or whatever, that was a legitimate target as far as they were concerned. So people flocked from the south heading north to Beirut, and we had images of people sleeping on the streets over the weekend, and then they bombed the center of Beirut.
Yeah, but again, what they would say is, you know, what we did is a decapitation of Hezbollah's leadership that were hiding in the center of Beirut in a bunker, and therefore, you know, in terms of the terms of war, the laws of war, that is a legitimate target. And whether they had information on that beforehand is another matter. But yeah, in terms of the international law, if you actually co-locate your headquarters under a civilian neighborhood, then that becomes a legitimate target despite that.
Now, they claim not to be at war with Lebanon. They are rather at war with Hezbollah. But as far as the people of Lebanon are concerned, the bombs that are raining down on them are the bombs of Israel.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those odd things. When you have a non-state actor or a foreign-supported actor occupying and effectively running a third of the country, the distinction between what is Hezbollah and what is Lebanon becomes somewhat moot, it could be argued. And certainly that's what they would argue. But you're right, the tragedy is that the Lebanese people, the ordinary Lebanese people, are caught up in this, and they haven't really got much say in the governance of the area. But many of them are also supportive of Hezbollah. One of the things that Iran did in installing Hezbollah in Lebanon was actually make it engage in social welfare activities to make it popular with the Lebanese people. So it is in the areas where it operates the de facto government, and a de facto government that has some degree of legitimacy. So, and say, distinguishing between what is Lebanon and what is Hezbollah is quite difficult.
Looking forward to some sort of resolution to this, and Joe Biden is repeating again and again, you know, warnings about we don't want all-out war in the Middle East and everything should be done to avoid it. No one's paying a blind bit of notice to Joe Biden. But at the end of the day, how much security does Israel buy? How much time does it buy before its problems multiply again?
Yeah, just pick up 2 points there. I mean, you're right. The international community, and the Americans in particular, seem impotent to influence Israel in this area. Israel knows that ultimately, if Iran were to attack Israel, America would help it in the way in which it did a few months ago when there was an attack from Iran against Israel, when the British and French were also involved in intercepting missiles and drones that were fired at Israel. So the American position, despite all the pleas, is fairly impotent for an Israel that wants to do what it wants to do. The long term is hugely problematic in terms of you know, what does this do? You know, as you mentioned earlier, suggested earlier, the replacement of leaders means that actually people will be flocking to the ranks of Hamas and Hezbollah in the region, wanting to actually pay exact the blood price that has been inflicted on them. This is a deeply problematic area when neither side wants to actually see the bigger picture and move away from the desire for revenge and the destruction of each other's enemies. What Israel plans to do, and what they're trying to do here, is to destroy the capability of its enemies to actually threaten its security in the short term. And they seem not to actually be contemplating a diplomatic solution to that, for example, the two-state solution or anything else. If that two-state solution would allow those states in Gaza or elsewhere to actually have the capacity, the military capability, to threaten or to attack Israel. So in a sense, that they're more concerned about actually creating military security, recognizing that the threats will be there in the future, rather than try and live with a political settlement that actually has a vulnerability to the sort of attack that they saw on October 7th. So it's an interesting framing of how you achieve security, and it's the one that actually the rest of the world doesn't quite see in the same way they do.
David Dunn, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.